This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by the Manhattan Comedy School. I'll be teaching a six-week podcasting class starting October 29th. It's a six-week course, 3 hours a week, so that's a total of 18 hours of instruction. And guess what? I'm having guest speakers come in and tell you about their own podcasting journey, like Lori Kilmartin, Adam Ferreira, David Feldman, Alonzo Bowden, and Jackie Cation. So head over to ManhattanComedySchool.com or my own website, ChristineBlackburn.com, for more information. I'd love to see you guys there. Hey, it's Christine with Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor and comedian Adam Ferreira shares a story about being nominated for Comedian of the Year.
So I fly my parents all the way out. I had a publicist at the time that took them around. And we're going down the red carpet. And, you know, you go down the red carpet and you say, it's an honor just to be nominated. So we're sitting at the table, right? And my mom's looking around. Oh, look at all these people. Joe, do you see everybody? Yeah. Sit up straight. Kevin Kline's looking. And I don't win. I forget who won that year. It might have been Dom Irera. I don't know. I don't win. And the winner is Dom Irera. And you hear my mother go, son of a bitch!
Today on the show, comedian Adam Ferreira talks about being nominated for the Best Comedian of the Year. Stick around.
Hey, it's Adam Ferreira, and you are listening to Storyworthy. I hope it ends well.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to Eddie Feldman last week. Eddie Feldman, what an amazing guy. Adam, do you know Eddie, the comedy writer?
I do. I know of him. I don't know him, but I know of Eddie. He's Dennis Miller, if I remember correctly.
That's exactly right. He was on Dennis Miller for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so his story that he told on the show was about working on the Dennis Miller show on the NBC lot the night Johnny Carson passed away. Mm. And that night, there was a lot going on the lot. Donald Trump was there with Melania for that Access Hollywood thing with Billy Bush. Mm-hmm. So he's there, and then Dennis Miller says to Eddie, let's go over to the Tonight Show stage because they're doing like a memorial. So they go over, and there's Don Rickles and Bob Newhart and Gilbert Gottfried, and everybody's there, and it is a tremendous evening. So go back, you guys, and listen to Eddie Feldman talking about the night Johnny Carson died. I'm telling you, it is so memorable. I don't know. The story really sticks with me. It's fabulous. But not today, you guys. Not today, because today I'm here with an amazing comedian and an actor named Adam Ferreira. You guys, you probably know him because, goddamn, Adam, you've done a lot of work.
Well, thank you. You think there'd be more money.
I'll tell you what, man. You have done so much work. And you and I have some things in common that I'm going to bring up in a second. But first, I want to say that your topic today that you bring to the table is, it's an honor just to be nominated.
Yeah.
And since you're a comedian, I hear the sarcasm because there's no fucking way it's as good to be nominated as it is to win.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Well, what it was I got nominated. You remember the American Comedy Awards?
Yeah. I know the American Comedy Awards because I still have some of their swag. I don't know if you have any good swag that like you never forget about, but from the American Comedy Awards, I got jumper cables.
Oh, yeah?
Do you remember getting those?
I got a couple of plaques, the nomination plaques, I think. That was it. And anything I got, I really didn't get to keep because my mom and dad went through it before I got it. So they took whatever they wanted.
Oh, that's so funny. You're so sweet. You gave your parents your swag bag?
I didn't give it to them. They took it.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
The other swag I got that was so helpful was an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
and that was a good one. And from the American Comedy Awards, and it had a flashlight on the base.
Oh, I remember that one, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
my mother. I still have that.
My mother took that.
Yeah. Now, here's a couple of things we have in common. First of all, I'm 3 weeks older than you.
All right.
We were both born in 1966, very mm-hmm. close to one another.
Right.
So I'm January, you're February.
I am.
And then the other thing is I am also of Italian descent, mm-hmm. like my mother, you know. And she says the same thing your mother says, which is,
what?
Put on a coat, I'm cold.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. They project everything on their fears, their aspirations, their kids. They project everything on their kids. Yeah, you know, I have to fight the impulse if you call my house after 10 o'clock to pick up the phone and say, who's dead?
That's so funny. I remember my dad used to say a lot, like if the phone rang between 6 and 7 p.m., he'd be like, who calls during the dinner hour?
Yeah, my mother. My mother would say the same thing. Yeah, who calls during dinner? I said, people who already ate, I think.
Or do you remember when it would be long distance?
Mm-hmm.
Shh. Shh,
yeah.
Long distance.
Do you remember, did you have give me one ring when you get home?
Yeah.
Yeah, but for those of you who don't know, who grew up with, I don't know, well-adjusted people, if you, whenever you would leave, you know, give me one ring, which means call me, just let it ring once and hang up so I know you're home. I don't want to pick up the phone and pay for the call.
But it's also a sweet way of being reassured as a parent.
Or
codependent. But like, I could see my daughter's only 13, mm-hmm. not allowed to leave the house, obviously.
Yeah, unless she's wearing a coat, I assume.
That's right. 3 to 4 coats and bring a spare.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like when she starts going out and about,
yeah,
she's 32, 35, mm-hmm. I will have her text me every time she gets home. Like, yeah. Just text me. Just say, okay, mm-hmm. I'll just say something that I know you're good.
Oh, I do the same thing. My wife drops me off at the airport when I got to go on the road, and I stand there until she's out of my sight because I'm standing. She's like, "Dad, go in." I go, "Nah, I got to watch you drive away and make sure you're all right." So,
that's
yeah.
sweet. That's love. I love that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm excited for you to come on to my podcasting class as well. I know you're going to break down your new podcast and tell the class about mm-hmm. how you're doing. And I do love your podcast.
A lot of friggin' work.
It is a lot of work.
I wish somebody would tell me that before I started this thing.
Yeah. No, it is a lot of work, depending on what your goals are in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So your podcast, it seems like it started off being called The Adam Ferreira Podcast, mm-hmm. but now it's called 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back.
No, it was so always it was always The Adam Ferreira Podcast, 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back.
And, oh, I see.
Yeah, and what the show is, it's when I started it, I'm like, okay, what do I want to do in this space that's different from everybody else? Because a lot of my friends, they talk to comics, your creative process, a lot of right. shows, and frankly, they do a great job. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to be different? So I wanted to capture a feeling. And the feeling I was going after was when I was a kid, the best night's sleeps I ever had is when I was upstairs and I hear my mom and dad and their friends downstairs laughing. That always brought me comfort. So I'm like, okay, that's what I want to capture. So the opening of the show is me, my wife, and my friends. We talk about a topic for about 10 minutes. We laugh. Then we cut away to a one-on-one interview I've done with either a celebrity. Could be an actor. Could be a comedian. I had a race car driver on. I had an FBI profiler on. I had the Jeopardy champion, Buzzy Cohen, who won the Tournament of Champions. I've had authors on. I had an
that
astronaut
was cool.
on. Yeah.
I mean, you had on, I know, a lot of big names, Jay Leno and Kevin Nealon, but you're yeah. going outside the comedy realm. I love
that. Yeah, and then that's the interview show. And then like any good group of friends, we talk about them when they leave. So we cut back and we do another 15 minutes. And did you hear when Nathan Lane said that? So
you're hilarious. Dude, we are so similar. I feel like you're my brother because that is one of the most comforting moments in my life, too. Our yeah. memories of my parents, they would be – we had a tiny little house, 8 people in a like less than 1,000 square feet.
Wow.
My sister and I slept in the living room on the sofa bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never had a bedroom. But anyway, my parents, they had a card club. And once a month, they would jam in even more people into my house. And they'd be like 12 people at like, no, more than that, like 16 people, like 4 card tables of 4 each.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember them playing cards and laughing. And my dad, I would like peek around the corner of the staircase, and I'd see my dad like changing the Frank Sinatra album or Stevie Lawrence and Edie Gourmet or something. Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there'd be smoke, always smoke hanging in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, they smoked in the house.
Oh, yeah. And they'd give us like a bag of chips and a bottle of Wink.
Mm-hmm. Wink.
Send us up steps.
What's the matter? They didn't have Shasta?
And Faygo. We had Faygo, too.
Yeah. No, you're not getting a Dr. Pepper. Have a Mr. Pibb. It's just as good.
Or Dr. Thunder.
Yeah.
That's the one they sell at Walmart. Instead of Dr. Pepper, it's called Dr. Thunder.
How? It's creepy.
Anyway, I so agree with that. It's something about our parents being happy that is so reassuring.
Well, yeah, it takes them out of being your parents. It makes them like there's a comfort to they're happy, so you've done nothing wrong. Again, go back to either Catholicism or codependency. I haven't weeded those two out of my psyche yet. But it's like when they're happy, there's a calmness into the house.
And, yeah, for sure. And I think that's part of why I fell into comedy is because of my dad laughing at Johnny Carson.
I got into it because is making my dad laugh because I idolized my dad and I love cars. I was on a car show for years and I can't fix them though, Christine. I don't have the mechanical ability. So I always felt less than. My job when I would work with my father on the car was to hold the light. We figured out that's what I got to do.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And I remember I was trying to work on the car. My father was standing in the garage watching me and he's smoking a Lucky. Right. So he puts his cigarette out. It's not going well. There's oil leaking. There's blood flowing, wrenches falling. And my father came over, he put his cigarette out, put his hand on my shoulder and said, son, you're going to have to get a job and work at something the rest of your life. This ain't it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
But when I could make him laugh.
Yeah.
I took away the stress. Like, oh. That's how I fit in. Now I get it.
So you only have one brother. That's interesting.
I got two.
Oh, you have two brothers. And you're the oldest.
I'm the oldest, yeah.
It's just interesting because, like, I'm the youngest of six. So my journey into comedy makes sense in the way that, like, I had to make people laugh or be on fire to get the attention. Mm-hmm. But you were getting attention.
Yeah, I was getting attention, but I didn't fit into... I didn't fit into it's not that I didn't fit into the family. I was different. I was just different. I was, I didn't have the mechanical ability. I had not more empathy, but I had more, I was more, aware of the room, you know, the room that the tone of the room, it was comic relief. You know, comic, we know the tension and we're programmed. Our default setting is to diffuse that tension. And I had that. So that was the role that I was aware of. I could play in the composition of the family.
So the peacemaker?
Yeah. Make everybody happy until you piss me off. Mm-hmm. If you piss me off, you know.
That's the Italian thing.
Yeah. I have that switch in my head.
So you had to grow up Catholic too.
Yeah. Well, here was my journey to Catholicism. My father sat me down and said, look, you've been baptized, you made your first communion, you made your confirmation. All your paperwork's done. If you want to go to church, you can go with your mother. I won't be there.
That's it.
Because God is everywhere. So come Sunday, God and I are going to be watching football.
Yeah.
Go in peace.
I totally agree. But in my family, it was my dad that was the one making us sit in the pew 10 minutes before the mass started so we could get in the mood. And he was the one.
Mood to what? Not understand and watch what the old lady does and follow her? That's the mood.
Oh, my God. And
yeah, what's the mood? He's dead, your fault. This is the mood I got to be into? Guilt? I have to get into guilt.
And it never stops. It never stops. We had to go to confession like you did, I'm sure, right?
You want to talk about a paradox? Italians don't confess to nothing.
We had to go every 6 weeks, and it was so miserable. I always said the exact same thing. I said, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. My last confession was 6 weeks ago. Mm. I lied, I swore, and I fighted with my brothers and sisters. That's what I would say every time. Yeah. And every time I got a different penance.
Yeah. Stations of the Cross, a trip to Lord. I wouldn't say anything. I went and I sat there and I would stare at the, and it wasn't through the screen. It was more, you sit there looking at the priest. So I'm looking at the priest.
Oh, it was face to face.
Face to face. I'm looking at him and he's like, okay, Adam, what brings you here today? I'm like, why? What'd you hear? I'm not saying nothing.
Come on.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Chris. I would make it up. I did it just because I had to.
Well, me too, obviously. Yeah. No, but I did it
to get to the confirmation stuff.
That's right.
Because I knew that once I did that, you know, my father, I'm on my own.
Right. You can be out. Well, the only good thing about when we went to confession is because afterward we got to go to Burger King and get a Whopper.
Yeah. Well, did you have catechism? We had to go after school? Yeah, you go to someone's house after school?
We had to go to the school, like, attached to the church. So it was like on Sundays was a fucking disaster, man. Yeah. It's like you're out of there at a house at 9 o'clock. You don't get home till like noon. Yeah. It was so cruel. It really was. It just seems so archaic now to me that you would make a child go through that.
Well, it came out of fear, I think. You know, like,
all religion does.
And I'm like, I don't need this. You have to be baptized. Why? Because you're dirty. What did I do? I just showed up. What did I do?
You're filthy.
Yeah, you're filthy. So,
well, it's just like any religion, you know, it's community. I agree with that. Like, I understand, like, my mom still goes to church. You know, Catholic women are Catholic forever. And that's her community. So that's great. I'm glad, you know, they're there for her. But when it comes down to it, it's just a call and response, like so many other religions, which is really just meditation.
That's where I went. I went into, I read a couple of books. I looked at, and I'm like, I'm going to have to figure this out on my own because I'm not getting a clear message. So I started meditating. I started reading a bunch of books and stuff, and I found my own way into, for lack of a better word, a spiritual kind of existence or pattern, whatever you want to call that. And then, and in doing that and going back and looking at the stuff they taught me when I was kids, I'm like, oh, it was just the way it was taught to me.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to look at, I'll give you an example. If you want to look at the Lord's Prayer, bless me, Father, for I have sinned, you know,
No, it's our Father who art in heaven.
Our Father, who art in heaven. Yeah. Sorry, I'm back in confession in my head. Look where you put me, Christy. Our Father, that old thing, but it's like, lead us not into temptation, which is future thought of anxiety. But deliver us from evil, which is looking back at the past in regret. So, that's what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, now that makes sense. I'm still not going back, but it makes sense.
Exactly. And like that prayer is still very reassuring to me, even though I'm not religious at all.
Yeah.
Every now and then, if something tragic happens, I go right to like Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Like I go to Hail Mary's.
See, I call the insurance company. I just want to make sure. God forbid something happens. I want to make sure I'm covered.
Hey, do you have any children?
I do not, no.
If you had children, would you make them go to church?
My mother would.
Well, they could go with her.
I would make a decision with my wife if we had kids, and I think we would arrive at something that makes everybody – I wouldn't make anybody do anything, but I would – there's a difference between making somebody, making a child do something, guiding a child do something, and not let them. It's up to you. No, you're a 4-year-old. You can't make that decision. I can expose you to this, and I can expose you to the things that worked for me. I can encourage you to think for yourself, but there are going to be certain boundaries and guide rails because you're a kid, okay? I'm not your friend. I'm your father.
Wow. You should come out here and talk to my daughter.
Yeah.
You got some stuff to say.
Well, that's what I got from my father. He's like, my father told me, I'm not your friend, I'm your father. My job is to give you a better life than the one I had. So pay attention because I'm tired and I'm running out of money. That was it. You knew where you stood.
So funny. Yeah. But then again, I mean, as a parent, that is like my job is to get my kid out of the house and on her own and independent. I mean, if your kid splits at 18, you pretty much did you did the right thing.
Yeah, if they know what they're doing. I mean, look, I got a buddy of mine who married a woman that had a child, so he was a stepdad. And he's like, you know, when this kid's 18, he's out of the house. I go, what makes you think he's leaving? This kid, are you kidding me? This guy's high in the morning. What makes you think he's ready to go at 18? This guy is he's Lamont Sanford. He's living home till he's 40.
That is so funny. Yeah. My daughter is the luckiest child ever. I have these trays and I take them to her room with food on them. Yeah. You know, because she's in school in the bedroom. And I take, you know, you're exactly right. My daughter isn't leaving till she's 35.
Yeah. Ma, we're getting married. Can we move into the living room? Yeah.
But you know what? Italian families love that, right?
Oh, yeah. They, first of all, there's always an older relative that lives with you. They paint the basement red and green. They put another kitchen down there because they don't want to get the garlic on the smell of garlic on the good drapes upstairs in the living room that nobody goes in.
Isn't that the truth? Now, my whole family, everybody in my family except me, because mm-hmm. I'm in an apartment in LA, everybody in Pittsburgh has two or three freezers in the basement or in the garage.
Yeah, one for the meat, one for the wink soda, and one for the pizza rooster that grandma made for Easter that nobody ate.
Yeah, that's right. One for Karen Zidi.
Yeah.
You remember on The Sopranos?
I had Sharippa on my show.
I saw that.
And he told
That's so
he
cool.
told that story.
Wow.
Yeah, because I asked him to tell that story. Yeah, I got coming? Oh, I got Michael Imperioli coming up.
Yeah, well, those
and
guys.
And who else did it? Edie Falco did one for me.
Oh, she's so brilliant. Well, I know you worked with her on Nurse Jackie.
All right, I'll tell you a story about Edie.
What a pro, man. Yeah. She is the best. But I do want to hear about that. But wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Have you been listening to to Talking Sopranos?
Oh, yeah, I tune in and out.
Yeah, me too, because there's a lot of, I mean, they're going to do the whole, they're doing episode by episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to last a while.
Yeah, and and it's nice when you can catch up and they're still there. So I tune in when I'm on the road. You know what I do it a lot? I do it a lot on Sundays for some reason. I need to hear Italian voices around right before football kicks in.
Yeah, oh, man. You know, I love Steve Sciarippa. What I love about him is he's so casual podcasting. Mm-hmm. It's like he's not even slightly trying. Do you know what I mean? Like
just talking.
Yeah, he's just talking. And when the ad comes on, he has to read. He's like, "You guys should get yourself the Bose speakers because I hear better than I ever did. Try now, Bose."
Yeah, it's great.
It's awesome. It's great. And they had on, you know who, Jamie Sigler.
Yeah.
Well, they have had on a lot of the cast.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, you had Steve Sciarippa on your show.
I did.
Good for you. Good for you. And can I hear something about Edie before we get to your other story?
So I get the job. I was, if for those of you who don't know, I was Edie's Edie Falco's boyfriend on Nurse Jackie. I did two seasons of Nurse Jackie. So I get the gig, and right away, my mother becomes queen of her community. You know. The other show, it didn't really register. Rescue Me, he's a fireman. I don't know. He's with his friend Dennis. Top Gear is like a cause. Good for him. Then when I got that gig, you know, my son is working with Edie Soprano. So, yeah. So, oh, Christine, she was queen of the day room when I got that. They all perked up. So, My wife sent me out to get some stuff and my mother was on the phone, right? So my wife was talking to my mother on the phone while I was out shopping. I came back in and she said, you know, Edie's got two kids and she gave her the whole story. So my mother hears this and my father passed away. So to process grief, my mother knits. That's how she processes grief. So basically I have more Afghans than Kabul. Because she's just going. Aww. So she finds out that Edie's got two kids. So she's going to make, and winter's coming. So she makes the kids winter hats. My mother calls me up because, listen, I want you to give this to Edie Soprano. She's a single mother. She's working. When does she have time to knit? Okay. All right, Ma. So she never made the hats before. The blankets are easy. They're a little crooked, but they keep you warm and who cares, right? The hats, they're awful. They're like, they're just terrible. The brim is like to the left. One is sticking up. They look like tiny little elephant man hats. They're like, You know, they look like Shivers Regal's bags. You know, the velvet bags that covers the Shivers Regal bag, but they're filled with marbles. You know, they just go. So I got these fricocka hats, right? And I'm like, oh, half of them. And then I'm thinking, you know what I'll do? I'll go buy a pair of hats. I'll tell Edie my mother made them. And I'm like, I can't bullshit her. They're made in China. My mother didn't make those. So I bring them to the set. I go, Edie, look, no pressure. My mother made Anderson and Macy these hats. And she's like, oh, my God. So she brings them home. She sends my mother a card with a note in it. And I get a call the next day. You know, when she gets it, I get a call. Let me tell you what a Lady Edie Soprano is. She did. She took that. She went to the store. She bought a card. She put pen to paper. She licked a stamp. She walked to the mailbox. And she mailed a letter to another person. She didn't push send. She took the time. That's a friggin' lady. Okay, Ma. All right, Ma, what did you do with the letter she sent you? I had it laminated. What?
Aww.
Yeah, it's in the curio next to the dishes and the picture of Sinatra. Okay, Ma. But before I did that, I made a copy of it so I could bring it to the day room to show the girls. I don't want to screw up the original.
That is so sweet.
Yeah.
That is so damn sweet.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm so happy Edie Falco did that.
And I actually told her that story on the podcast, and she was hysterical. She never heard that story before, and I didn't realize.
Yeah,
I never told.
That's damn sweet, man. Yeah. Good story. All right, well, we're going to get your story in just a second because I'm anxious to hear the story. You bring forth a topic. It's an honor just to be nominated.
Yeah.
And like I said, I highly doubt that. But I know that in order to get stars to go to these award shows, mm-hmm. they do have to tell them. Do they have to tell them they won or no? How do they get people to go?
I just found out that I was American Comedy Awards. I got nominated for Comic of the Year. So you just
it's huge.
Well, whatever it was, it was nice. And I flew my parents out. I did not know anything, so maybe
okay.
I didn't win, so maybe it's because
well,
I didn't
I'm
win.
Anxious to hear this, but I remember the award shows. It was at the Shriners, I think.
Yeah,
it was one of those big auditoriums.
Was it the yeah. Dorothy Chandler Pavilion was once, and the other one was, I forget.
Yeah, I know. They're all the same anyway.
You get in the car. You hope your breath.
You get in the car.
You hope your breath doesn't stink.
And you probably have to do a valet thing.
Yeah. The best red carpet I ever went to, I had to go to, was a day red carpet with my wife.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I forget what movie it was, but it was, I wasn't in a movie, so I just had to go for the press line and get the picture taken.
Yeah.
So I go to the press line. The guy, they pick us up. They pick you up an Escalade, which is nice.
Yeah.
So it's at the movie theater. I go through the press line. I tell the driver, I said, you see that Carl's Jr.? Yeah. Go wait in that parking lot. Because the emergency exit to the movie theater in the lobby was right by the Carl's Jr. I said, okay.
So smart.
So we walk in, right? I go down the press line. I do a little interviews and everything. I get my picture. My wife looks gorgeous. It's the middle of the day. It's great. We go into the lobby. We shake hands, kiss baby, say hi to. We got to say hi to. Everyone goes in to watch the movie. Honey, come with me. We go right by the bathroom. We go out that emergency exit. The car's right there. We get in the car. I was home watching football before the first act of that movie was over.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
But it's true. You kind of have to go and do that footwork to make the connections that stick.
Yeah.
And you need those photos for press stuff.
It's a job.
It's just a job.
It's a
exactly.
job. It's you know, yeah. it's part of it.
And you're damn good at it because you're so successful. All right. Let's get your story in just a second here. But before we do, I did want to remind you guys that the Storyworthy Hour of Power is going very well. Every Sunday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time, I entertain you with four fabulous storytellers for 1 hour, and I'm on my 25th show, so it's going really well, you guys. So don't you worry about Sunday nights, because I'll entertain you. And the best part might be that we play Story Smash, the storytelling game show, following the Hour of Power at 7 o'clock with Blaine Kapach and Danny Zucker. And Adam, you've got to come on because you would make a fantastic judge.
I'd love to. I'd love to. I'm having a good time now.
Yeah, isn't that funny, huh? I am too. I've done quite a few shows and, you know, kind of just rolling out of the bedroom mm-hmm. and doing a show. And then, I don't know. I mean, I want this all to end because I do miss nights at the Improv and I miss going out, obviously. But at the same time, I've made a lot of connections that otherwise I might not have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
even you.
Yeah. The other the nice thing about this is we have the capability to do this. But you do. I do miss going out. Like this is coming out the 27th.
Yes.
I'm doing a show the 30th in Royersford, Pennsylvania at the Soul Joel's Amphitheater. It's out.
Right on,
it's
man.
Outside. So it's socially distanced, it's safe, and it's people making the best of the situation. There's you can it's bring your own booze, bring your own chair, but it's outside.
Fun.
There's everyone's distances, and it's in Pennsylvania, Royersford, Pennsylvania, on October 30th. And I did a couple of drive-ins that were cool. Fun. So yeah, it's just making the best.
Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a little, I was a little nervous because first of all, they don't laugh. They blink their lights and honk their horn. So. It's like working oncoming traffic.
Adam.
And I'm standing there, and my image is on the movie theater. So my mole looks like a manhole cover. And I'm up. What got me was a bunch of Top Gear fans show up in pickup trucks, and they backed them cool. into the spots and took lawn chairs and sat in the back of the bed of the truck.
So cool.
So I could hear the laughter, so I did have a sense of timing.
That's terrific. Well, people are really pitching in and trying to make the most of a situation. I'm impressed by a lot of people right
the
now.
The emergence of humanity is encouraging.
It's true. It's true. I agree. All right, you guys. He's here right now. Adam Ferreira. You've heard him. He's an actor and a comedian known for playing Chief Needles Nelson on the FX series Rescue Me, like you mentioned. And you were also a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear.
Yes.
And I didn't know that was in another country first.
Yeah, it was the UK version is the mothership. That's been on for, it's been all over the globe for, God, years. I mean, maybe 25 years. I actually had Richard Hammond, if you're a car guy, I had Richard Hammond on the show as well. Yeah. He was on that show. I'll be talking to James May, who's on that show as well.
Cool.
And I got car guys too on the show too. Like I said, Leno, Adam Carolla did one for me.
Have you talked to Spike Ferenstin?
No, but I did his podcast. I got to get Spike online.
Cool.
But yeah, that's
the
other
thing.
Yeah, we you do that when you do these podcasts. Like Ryan Sickler is a friend of mine. He has the Honeydew podcast.
Yeah.
I'm doing his next week. He did mine. You know, Jimmy Pardo.
I love
Isn't he sweetheart? And, yeah, and all those guys, Greg Fitzsimmons. It's a nice.
That's cool.
It's a nice artist you fear. It's a nice community to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, like you mentioned, you played NYPD Sergeant Frank Varelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie, which is awesome. Now, how did you find out you weren't going to be on the show anymore after 2 years?
I found out in the last, because it was, I did 2 years and I was supposed to be in year three. And we shot the scene at the wedding where Edie's ex-husband or Jackie's ex-husband gets married. In the wedding, my son and Jackie's daughter steal the aboost, as the Italians call it, the money, and run away together. Oh. And I was supposed to be there to find the kid. So, you know, they said, oh, you might be back season three. You know, they don't tell you, but there was a wink and a nod. When I saw the last scene we shot together about discovering that, they cut it. I looked at my wife. I go, he ain't coming back. You're such a pessimist. I go, no, I'm not a pessimist. I'm a storyteller. I know how this goes. They took that beat out. And sure enough.
Wow, man.
And sure enough, but they did the sweetest thing. One executive producer called me personally and said, it's not you. They loved your storyline. Because I was only supposed to do like 3 or 4 episodes, and I did 2 years because the writers found out I could write for that character. And me and Edie had great chemistry, and everyone, it was just a good fit, Christine. So they said, it's not you, it's just the end of, this is our last season, and we don't want it to be, it has to be about Jackie, not about Jackie and Frank. And I remember looking at my wife, she goes, are you upset? I go, what upset? We're supposed to do 3 episodes, I soaked them for 2 years, and the check's cleared. Next, let's go. I made friends, I had
amazing.
A great experience, and that's what it is. That's one of the lessons I learned there, was looking at what it was and how much I enjoyed it, and not looking for, because if I kept looking for it to continue, I wouldn't enjoy it in the moment. And when it was gone, I would be left with regret. And I didn't want to be left with regret. I wanted to absorb everything as far as having that artistic outlet, being able to play at that level, and to enjoy the experience of creation. And I was very proud of myself because I did. I didn't do that in earlier projects. I was on a cop show called The Job. with Dennis Leary. It was the show before Rescue.
Yeah.
So I was my first real major television thing. We did 2 years, and I was so worried. You know, that, you know, paranoia in this business. I was so worried about, this is going to go away. I was so worried about, am I doing a good job, that I didn't enjoy it. I wasn't settled enough in myself to enjoy it. But as I started doing Rescue Me, I did a couple of movies and I did a couple of things. And movies actually taught me more how to be more present, because there's an end date to it. You know, it's not like a series. You know, it's not like there's an end date to it. So you know that, okay, this is a closed end thing. What can I, how much can I enjoy this in the moment? So the second big movie I did, I'm going to say it was with Ryan Reynolds. It was a movie called Definitely Maybe. But I remember telling myself, I remember telling myself, soak this up, make this an exercise.
I've been on a couple of film sets, and when I'm working, I think I'll look around, and I'll see people on their phones and stuff, and I'm like, are you crazy? Stay right with us here, because we ain't going to be here next week. Yeah. You know, it's too short. Yeah. But that's, you are really a seasoned pro to be able to absorb that information you got from that, from Nurse Jackie, because that in one hand would be shattering, but at the same time, you're right. Everything ends. Mm-hmm. And you got to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to, and going into it, when it was only like a 3 or 4 episode thing, and then when it got bigger and bigger and bigger, there was a sense of gratitude that I was, aware of. And then I was also aware of, taking it in, and I realized, well, why can't I take it in? Oh, you feel you don't deserve it. You Catholic codependent Italian son of a bitch.
Yeah.
An awareness to, I'll use the word learn, but I'd rather use the word experience it and allow myself. Because if I use the word learn, it's like, I came up with this phrase during that. I'm grateful that I've learned rather than being angry that I didn't know. Because I kicked the shit out of myself that I didn't know to do that. And that triggers regret. So I was grateful that I learned in one experience that fed to another one, if that makes sense.
Wow. That's good. I love that. I love that. I don't know why the Catholicism does that to us, because I can't quite pinpoint it, except for, I mean, the fact that we had to pray all the time and confess.
I don't know if it does it to it, or it's a contributing factor to the cultural stuff, because, you know, it's easy to blame that stuff, but it's part of the culture we grew up with. You know, I'll be honest with you, I basically grew up in a crime family without the money, power, or influence, just the fear and paranoia.
Yeah. You know. I understand that.
My father would be like, don't let anyone outside this house know what we talk about in here. I'm like, the windows are open and you're screaming. They can hear you. I'm not a rat. You're yelling.
All right. Listen, you also have been on The Tonight Show, The Late Show with David Letterman, and Comedy Central. And like we said, you've got a fantastic new podcast out right now called 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also currently starring on CBS's All Access show, Why Women Kill, with Jennifer Goodwin and Lucy Liu.
Yep.
And tell me a little bit about that.
That's great. It's written by Mark Cherry, who did Desperate Housewives. Mm. And it's set in three different decades, the 60s, the 80s, and current day. And it's about three different relationships. The women have an issue in each one.
Oh, I love it. And which decade are you in?
I'm in the 60s. It's great. It's a period piece. I play Alicia Coppola is my wife, and I play Sal Mascone, the dry cleaning king of Pasadena. Don't make believe you haven't heard of me.
That's a blast. Yeah. Oh, what fun.
So I go to wardrobe. They dress me up in a period piece. They give me a little pork pie hat on my head. I take a picture, I send it to my mother, I go, who do I look like? You look just like your Uncle Tony. Perfect! Now I know how to play the guy.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely. That will give you a complete image. Just answer and talk like that. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, he's here right now, wherever you are. Put your hands together for Adam Ferreira.
Thank you for having me. And I want to tell you a story about the American Comedy Awards and, surprisingly enough, my family coming out. So I get nominated, right? I call my mother and father. It's like you said, it's either Dorothy Chandler Pavilion or some big place. And it's a big deal. So I call my mom and dad. I said, I'm flying you guys out. because I forget what I was doing at the time. I was on a TV show at the time. I was like, come on, I'm flying you guys out. And they don't leave, you know. When I did Letterman, coming into the city was a big deal. You know, the Italians don't like to travel. Even Columbus had to go to Spain to get the boats. You know, they weren't going to give him the boats. I mean, the Italians were just like, Chris, where you going? Let's stay here, have some wine. We'll tip over some gondolas. So I fly my parents all the way out. I had a publicist at the time that took them around. And we're going down the red carpet. And, you know, you go down the red carpet and you say, it's an honor just to be nominated. So I'm talking to somebody over the red carpet, Entertainment Tonight or something. And I'm in the middle of the interview, and my mother comes right in the middle of it. The camera's on me, Christine. And my mother walks right in and goes, Adam, I want it. And she turns to the camera and goes, oh, hello. Adam, the publicist lady is going to take us into the table now because I have to pee, all right? Your father's with me, and we'll meet you inside. She turns, Joe, come on. We got to go. And she walks right through the shot. I'm looking right at the camera. With this what the fuck look on my face. And my father walks right through the shot and goes, look at all these friggin' people. My God, where did they park? So we're sitting at the table, right? And my mom's looking around. Oh, look at all these people. Joe, do you see everybody? Yeah. Sit up straight. Kevin Kline's looking. Okay, fine. So she elbows my father. He sits up straight. And they show a clip of me, which was nice. And everyone claps and everything. And I don't win. I forget who won that year. I think it might have been Dom Irrera. I don't know. I don't win. And the winner is Dom Irrera. And you hear my mother go, son of a bitch. She slapped the table and said, son of a bitch.
That is so funny. Was this, real quick, was this a meal happening or was it just drinks or what was it?
Yeah, no, I think they gave us dinner. I don't remember. George Schlorter produced it. Mm-hmm. And I think we had dinner or something. I don't know what it was. It was a whole big thing. But, you know, it was nice. They get to see all the celebrities and stuff. And I was, you know, I was still wide-eyed, too. You know, I met Richard Pryor that night.
That night,
I met Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was my hero. When I was a kid, I was 12 years old, and I went to one of those parties, those parties you go to with your parents where you get the warning in the car.
Yeah.
Like, now your father does business with these people. Don't behave like an animal. So they were downstairs watching Richard Pryor, and we were too young. We weren't allowed in. So they went upstairs for coffee. I went in. I rewound the tape. It was the Santa Monica concert. And I stood, Christine, I stood staring at the TV. And I remember saying out loud to nobody, I'm like, look what this man can do. It's like I didn't know I wanted to be a comic. I just knew at some point, I just knew this was important. Wow. I didn't know how or why, but it was a profound feeling. I'm like, this is important. So he was in the wheelchair, and I didn't want to go up. I was terrified. But I went with my pal, Mary Ellen Hooper. I took her with me, and she's a comic as well. She goes, you have to go up and say hello. That's Richard Pryor. I said, I can't. He goes, this is the only opportunity you're going to get. And she pushed me to go up, and I said, and they showed a clip of me before. This was during the commercial break. And I said, Mr. Pryor, I just want to say hello and say thank you for all you've done. He looked over at me and went, hey, you're fucking funny.
Oh,
he just saw the clip, and I just went, "Thank you." And I just boom.
That's boom. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So I had that moment. So now I don't win, right? My mother goes, "Son of a bitch." Now we're at the after party. They always had an after party at. I think it was at the Comedy Store. Yeah, it was the Comedy Store.
I think it was the Comedy Store because that's where I saw Richard Pryor. Mm-hmm. Was at the Comedy Store after the Comedy Awards. And that was like 99, I think, or 98. But go ahead. Yeah.
So it's a Comedy Store. And then people come in. They come to the parties, you know. And so Rickles was there. I don't know why, but his Rickles was there. I know, and Roseanne. I think Roseanne threw the party or something.
Oh, really?
And I think he had to go in and say hello. I don't know what the circumstances were. But the circumstances I remember was I was looking over and I saw – my father, he was animated. He was getting older at that time, Christine, but he was animated and he was talking and he was holding court. He was my father that I remembered when I was a kid. He was that big guy, just you could see him. He filled a room with that energy. And he's talking to Don Rickles.
Oh, my God. And, that's
and I looked
so
over
sweet.
To him and I went over to say something and I realized my father was in – he's trying to sell him a kitchen because my father was in the kitchen and bathroom business.
No.
Yes. The reason he was so animated was he was selling. He was working. He was trying to charm Don Rickles into, I don't know how the hell they got into that conversation, but they're talking. I guess he was redoing his kitchen. What do you do here? And I remember walking in going, Don, you got to spend the money on the appliances. Get the Sub-Zero refrigerator. Don't go cheap on the appliance. And Rickles is listening to him like, oh, yeah, I need the Sub-Zero. I mean,
that was mother, such a gift to give to your parents that night.
Yeah. My mother still got a picture. I got a picture of me and Rickles in downstairs at my mother's house.
That is so beautiful. And Roseanne, at that time, she was on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. Okay, so that's a hell of a night. Then you take your parents back to their hotel?
Yeah, I got them in a hotel. I had a little apartment. I got them back to the hotel.
It's just so sweet.
And they drove around. I took my father down. I remember I drove him up in the hills to show him Beverly. I showed him all the stuff, and we're driving around. And he's like, look at these people spend all this money. They don't get a yard. There's no yard. Spend all this money to live next to somebody on a friggin' hill? Get the hell out of here.
That is so funny. It's such a Midwest / East Coast thing to have a yard.
You got a yard. Yeah.
And it's all about, there's nobody in the front of the house or the yard. Everybody's in the backyard anyway.
Yeah.
So there's all this wasted space.
Unless you're my uncle. My uncle's got the garage door open. He's sitting in a lawn chair with a hibachi cooking a hamburger with his white socks and sandals, listening to the game on the radio.
I love that. I love that, because that's somebody who's truly happy in the moment.
He was miserable.
Listen, there's a guy down the street from me who keeps his garage open, and he has a mini railroad set, like a whole town or whatever, and he's in there every day. I'm like, God bless you, man. Good on you.
Do me a favor. Don't let your daughter walk past there unescorted. I just got a bad feeling about a grown man with chains in the garage. Jesus. With the door open.
Okay, so the second time you were nominated, was it the same thing, Comedian of the Year?
Yeah, same thing. I didn't win that either.
Did they show the same?
I flew my parents out again. I go, come on, let's go.
They loved it again, right?
Yeah, it was to be able to do that. One of my favorite stories about my dad. And he told me the story. He's passed away, but he told me the story. We used to do the Rescue Me comedy tour every year. We did it for about 3 years. And one year we premiered the new episode, and it was right after 9/11. So we premiered the new episode and started the tour at Radio City Music Hall.
Oh,
so my name is up at Radio City Music
Hall. So there's Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary, Adam Ferrara, Lenny Clark, Rescue Me comedy tour, Rescue Me
Terrific.
Premiere, FX spot.
Wow.
Big thing, right? So I call, and we did the tour every year. We did like 10, 11 cities. So I called my mom and dad, and I said, Pop, I'm playing Radio City. Yeah, your mother told me, kid. She also said you're doing the Mohegan Sun Casino. We're going to go to that one.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah, because he wanted to gamble. I said, okay, and we're playing the arena. I said, okay, well, all right, Papa. I said, you're going to come to the show, right? He goes, oh, of course, we're going to come to the show. You know, unless I get on a rush. But, you know, we should be there.
Unless I'm, you know, the dice are on fire. Then.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Because also Radio City Music Hall is like a landmark.
Yeah. I got – my mother yelled at Dennis Leary backstage at Carnegie Hall.
What did she say?
We were doing the Toyota Comedy Festival. We played Carnegie Hall. So Dennis, we were a bunch of us. So Dennis hosted the thing. I go up and I just hit it right. I had a great set. I got a standing O at Carnegie Hall. It was just like, wow. So I walk off stage. Dennis walks out and he said, oh my God, standing ovation at Carnegie Hall. Come back out. He brings me back out for a curtain call. He goes, your mom and dad are here, aren't they? Where are you? And the lights come off the stage and they're looking around the audience for my mother. And they're there and they wave. They come backstage and my mother is waving her finger at Dennis. Dennis is tall. My mother's really short. He goes, don't you ever do that again. I don't want the cameras on me. If I wanted to be on stage, I'd be on stage. I was in the audience for a reason. You hear me? And Dennis is just like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
That's such an honest moment. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love when parents are parents, you know?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, Adam, you've had a great career, and there's so much ahead. I mean, obviously, you're acting on the new Lucy Liu show.
Yeah.
And you've got your podcast, and you're performing on Zoom all the time and stuff, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I got a couple of stand-up dates. You can go to my website and check out my stand-up dates. Like I said, I have that Soul Jewel.
Yeah, you got the outdoor shows.
30th. I'm also doing Helium in Indianapolis. In December, I'm doing Cleveland in Hilarities in Cleveland and the Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. Those dates are in September. My podcast comes out every Thursday.
This has been such a treat. You crack me up. You remind me so much of my brother. Your upbringing is so similar to mine. It's just awesome. I'm really happy to meet you, Adam. Thank you so much.
I enjoy being with you, Christine. Best to you and your family, okay?
All right. Now, listen, guys, follow Adam over there on Twitter, at Adam Ferreira, and also check out his website, like we said, adamferreira.com. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented Adam Ferreira, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.